Before we start today's show, let me tell you about the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. You can go in to the Blue Sky, get some ribs for the night, get some ribs for the Super Bowl. We're going to talk to Jeffrey in a little while about his menu. You can make your menu ribs from the Oxford Exxon, wet or dry, call ahead. They'll be ready to go. They'll be packed up and waiting on you there. You know, you get the for cheaper gas as well with the mobile rewards out, the Speed Pass Plus, and much more at Blue Sky. So take advantage of that on this weekend as you head to your Super Bowl parties on Sunday night. Also coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, Highway 25 South there in Amory. Because you give Corey Clark a call, he's going to get you a quote within 15 minutes. You're going to take it ultimately, even if you decide to shop it around. And when you do so, mention the podcast. This podcast, any other MPW Digital family of podcasts, $500 off there with Clark Ford. So do that. Head on over to the Oxford Exxon, and now we'll get on with the show.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MPW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, Clark Ford at studio this morning. Jeffrey Wright will join us in a bit. As always, we'll talk some college basketball, a little college baseball, a lot of NFL, Super Bowl, and much more with one Mr. Wright. We'll get a Super Bowl menu for the party on Sunday and let him entertain you as always on this Thursday. Talk a lot of basketball today as Ole Miss comes off a 90-86 overtime loss to Florida last night in Gainesville. The Rebels led by three with 8 seconds remaining. Kentucky hit a three, tied it, went to overtime, and for the most part controlled the overtime session as Mike White and the Gators pull one out. Ole Miss missing a huge opportunity for a quadrant one win and a win to snap the skid. Instead, the skid reaches another game, and Ole Miss has another big one on Saturday against Mississippi State in Oxford. The Bulldogs coming off that loss to Alabama in Tuscaloosa on Tuesday night. I haven't heard an update on Nick Weatherspoon. I'll look for that probably while we're talking in a minute. But nonetheless, Ole Miss misses the opportunity on a couple plays there that have gotten dissected in a lot of ways. So we'll do some of that as well. Quotes up on the site from how Kermit and others kind of discussed it and explained it last night from Gainesville. But at the end of the day, Ole Miss moves now to 4-3 in the SEC, 14-6 overall. And as much as any game can be a swing game prior to February, last night appeared to be one for the Rebels.
It's huge. They had an opportunity to win a road game and a quadrant one win. Or what would have been a quadrant one win at that point. I'm not convinced it will be at the end of the year. I think Florida's got losses coming. Frankly, I think Florida's got a lot of losses coming. But, yeah, if Ole Miss finishes a game short, if they end up being one of those first four out, they'll look back on that night, no question. Simple as that.
Ole Miss falls down to 37th in the net after last night. Florida is at 39 as well. So two programs kind of in the same shape, frankly, at this point. And Ole Miss, look, if there's a part of this schedule, and we're going to get into this, but if there's part of this schedule where they're going to make some hay, it's right now.
It's right now.
Yeah, this is it right now. All the other stuff's over. They've got State at home. They've got A&M at home. And then they go to Georgia. They got three games in a row. And then after a trip to Auburn, they got Missouri at home. So, look, there's – I thought Ole Miss played hard.
Games.
I thought Ole Miss looked a little fresher last night than I thought they had the last couple times out for the most part.
Well,
now, look, they're still thin.
After the first few minutes, like, I thought Terrence Davis played well. He made some bonehead decisions late in the game.
He did what he does, and that's fine because he did enough positively to be that guy.
That's what I was going to finish. But if you get 26-12 from a guy, he did his part. K.J. Buffin was absolutely terrific last night. Thought Brian started slow, got going, played well. I thought Shuler did some good things. The foot's bothering him, but I thought he played through it. They got nothing out of Henson.
Yeah, fouled out after just nothing.
I don't have the numbers in front of me. I thought Dom was okay. I don't think Bruce is an SEC player. They're thin. DC Davis played a few minutes. was okay. He was fine. But you had the game. You had the game in hand. In fairness to Ole Miss, for all the talk about the shot to send the game to overtime, the shot that cut it to one before Tyree's free throws was pure freaking luck.
The and up and under, just throw it up and it goes
he
in.
He just threw it up. It was great defense, and he just threw it up.
Yeah, you could see Kermit's reaction where he just sort of threw his hands at it like, come on.
That was as big of a play as any play.
Because you get the rebound there, you're up three.
You go get fouled, you're up four or five, and you probably win the game, and it's over. Yeah. But it didn't happen like that. And in fairness to Florida, Brian misses the layup there, and Ole Miss gets lucky to get a tie ball.
Yeah.
And the arrow is pointing your way, which is absolute random luck. So you have a shot. You only get 3 seconds off the clock, which is fine, before they foul Tyree. To Brian's credit, he knocks down both free throws. I think Ole Miss took the timeout right there. If I recall, I know. In fact, I know they did. Ole Miss took the timeout right there because at the end of that, Kermit said, this is our last timeout. We have no timeouts or something along those lines. I could read his lips. And then we get into the debate about whether you foul or not. And as you'll hear in our interview with Jeffrey, I am absolutely a foul there guy.
Foul immediately?
No. Look, and I'm not a basketball coach. And I'm not questioning Kermit Davis. He's done this. However many times he's done it is that many times more than I've done it. But I was sitting in here saying I'd foul. I was talking to myself, but I was saying I'd foul. What I would do in that scenario, if possible, is this. I pressure in the backcourt. I want them to exert some time and energy getting the ball up. Now, to do that, you might – one of two things. Here's where it can go wrong for you is – and Kermit talked about this. You can go start to foul a guy, and he realizes that you're fouling.
And he's up.
And he takes a 50-footer. Is he going to make a 50-footer?
And sometimes the ref will give him the whistle.
Well, if it's a foul, it's a foul. Referees, as you see in overtime, don't want to make that call, and they will eat their whistle. Shuler got fouled late in the overtime, they ate it.
Yeah.
And that's just because they don't want to call the game right there. And people could say, well, that's not how it's supposed to be. Yeah, I get that, but it is. If you watch enough sports, you know that the last 2 minutes of an NBA game, for example, are officiated differently than the first 46. You know that going in. Is that right? You understand my point?
Yeah.
You know that going in. They're going to let more physicality happen because the last thing the official wants, as the Saints and Rams officials can tell you, the last thing they want is for the officiating to be what's the topic of conversation after the game. So they would prefer to let the players play. But if you commit what turns out to be an egregious foul 55 feet away from the basket and it's a shooting foul, he is going to go shoot. So you've got to make sure that you communicate, hey, foul in a way that is not shooting.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, as little as basketball as I watch, I'm more proponent of the foul. And I tell Jeffrey later and you, a lot of that was because I didn't think they could win the game in overtime. I thought they had to make this thing happen in regulation one way or the other. The other thing I'll ask you, though, is Kermit, you talk about this with Jeffrey. Kermit talked about this last night, frankly, if you had any type of context to what he was saying. He didn't necessarily trust his team. He doesn't necessarily trust this group of players in a lot of ways.
How could he?
And is your opinion, do you think, altered a little bit that you watch so much NBA that you're seeing a different level of basketball IQ than maybe goes on at the college game on what
sure.
you would do?
Sure. I've told people. I mean, people say, why don't you watch a lot of college basketball? Because I watch a lot of NBA and the product is 8 gazillion times superior.
Well, it's not even the same product.
The same product. But if you watch the college game, you know that when these situations happen, this is something that college coaches grapple with. What do you do? The NBA game is different because when you call a timeout, you inbound the ball in the front court.
Yeah.
So you have to be super careful about committing a foul in the NBA game because the shooters that are going to get the ball in those situations are some of the best offensive players on the planet, and they're going to find a way to take a shot. And not only that, they might make the shot while you foul them. So it could turn into a four-point play. I am a proponent of pressuring, making them eat clock to get it to half court. My biggest criticism is not that they didn't foul. And I'm a critic of not fouling. My biggest criticism is, man, they got the ball to the midcourt line in less than 2 seconds.
Yeah, and it comes down to trust on that call as much as anything, because you're either you're trusting your team when you foul to make a smart foul, to guard correctly, and then frankly to get an inbounds pass in and make free throws.
Yeah.
Those are the things you're trusting all the way around versus, hey, let's play some defense and see if they hit a shot.
And they took a shot that went through the net with 2.5 left.
There was putback potential there.
I mean, that ball could have been kicked out for a shot and another shot.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of those kind of deals that it's easy to second guess. He took about 23, 24 footer.
He's in the corner right
but
there.
But he got
yeah.
I thought he got a good look. I thought he got a better look than probably Kermit wanted him to get. I thought KJ Buffin defended it fine. But KJ, I thought, was attempting not to foul, making sure he didn't foul on that shot. It's a long shot.
Well, yeah, he made sure it was straight up on the shot there.
And, you know, he missed it. I mean, he made it, and you knew what was going to happen in overtime. I thought Ole Miss didn't have much composure early in
the
overtime.
No, they were spastic a little in overtime right there.
Came back and kind of made it.
And Florida got red hot. I mean, yeah. Everything they threw up went in at that point.
Your money's on the team that forces the overtime every time, no matter what.
And the home team.
Yeah. So, it's a big loss. It was an opportunity to win a game. And if they come up a game short, they'll remember that one. But here's the deal. If you're Ole Miss and they got back late last night, you go to work today, you got to put it in your rearview mirror. You do not have time if you're Ole Miss to let this thing haunt you.
They cannot beat you twice.
You now have to beat Mississippi State on Saturday, and they'll be playing in all likelihood without one of their better players. And you've got to win that game, and then you've got to beat Texas A&M, and you get an opportunity next Saturday against a team that is very beatable. And frankly, you need to go steal one now.
It's not Auburn.
Oh, I'm talking about Georgia.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Probably not going to win at Auburn.
That's right. They're back-to-back. I keep forgetting that. Yeah. Then, you know, they come back and play Missouri after that.
And then you got to beat Missouri, and you probably got to beat Missouri twice. And there's some games that are still there to be won. People keep asking for the number. It's an opinion. I think that number's 11. I think 10-8 in the league is real iffy.
It brings Nashville into play, and it's bubbly, especially given Ole Miss's non-con, which, frankly, at this point is Baylor and not a lot else.
Right. So I think you got to get to 11 wins, and that's doable, but it's going to be hard, and there's not a lot of margin for error. Now, you know, if you're wanting me to be Mr. Positive, here's Mr. Positive. You're going to get home shots against top five teams.
Tennessee and Kentucky.
Win one of them, and we're not having this conversation. But those are going to be hard games to win. You're going to get an elite shot at Auburn. Go beat Auburn twice. We're having a totally different conversation about that game. About that deal. So there's opportunities left. Is it the end of the world? No. Is it no big deal? No. It's in between those two things. There are people that are out making it like it's the end of the world, and they're wrong. And there are people that are trying to say, oh, well, it's no big deal. No, it's a big deal. You had a chance at a Quadrant one win on the road. And when you have a shot at one of those with a three-point lead with 8 seconds left, a three-point lead with a minute left, you need to get it done. And you need to – this team – here's the thing with this team, and I've been saying this a lot, and it's a long diatribe here. This is not a good defensive team. It's not going to become a good defensive team. So on offense, when you have chances to put games away – you've got to cherish the basketball. You've got to have good shot selection. You've got to be smarter. And I know it comes with the territory with Terrence Davis, but it's the thing he's got to overcome. If this team is going to max out whatever maxing out is, late in games, when the game's on the line, He's got to be a smarter basketball player.
Obviously, they need wins, and that's all that really matters. But non-con standpoint, they're in a little better shape than I thought they did. They are, honestly. And I get RPI doesn't matter, but it's the equivalency to compare to previous seasons. Almost 69th right now in Division I non-con RPI. That's a lot higher than I thought it would be. So
yeah, they're okay.
A little number there. I just didn't expect that for whatever reason. I don't know. Around the league last night, there were only two other games. They were both blowouts. Auburn at home just destroyed Missouri, 92-58 for that one at Auburn Arena. I don't know. They have Austin Wiley back last night, or they did that without him?
No, they did it without him.
Wow.
He's not close.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And then also last night, LSU goes on the road and wins in A&M at Reed Arena, 72-57 in that one. Tremont Waters was excellent for the Tigers as they win by 15 at A&M.
So what's Ole Miss's schedule? It's Mississippi State, then A&M at home.
Yeah, and then
at Georgia.
And then at Georgia. And then at Auburn.
Auburn in a midweek?
Yeah, Wednesday night.
And then what's after Auburn? Missouri at home?
Missouri at home.
Then what?
Carolina on the road.
Then?
Back-to-back home games against Georgia and Tennessee.
Yeah.
It's a good schedule for wins.
There are a lot of wins in there if you'll go get it done. And look, they ought not be intimidated about a trip to Athens or a trip to Columbia because, quite frankly, they should be 3-1 on the road right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the only road game that popped them was Alabama, and Alabama's proving to be a pretty good home team. They've beaten Kentucky, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State at home. Give Alabama some credit. I know nobody likes to give credit to people, but Alabama's a pretty damn good team in
Ole Miss
Tuscaloosa.
Needs to wake up on February 24th having taken care of business, because then after that, you just go throw a free shot at Tennessee, and who gives a crap, and then you move on with your day. I mean,
who's after Tennessee? It's at Arkansas.
It's a little weird there. This is why this middle is so important. Because
at Arkansas, then Kentucky, and then at Missouri.
Yeah. It's Arkansas on the road, Kentucky at home, and then you close in Como.
You're almost asking to go win the two road games.
Yeah, it's weird there.
But they play well on the road. Bud Walton won't be intimidating at that point in all
likelihood.
You
got to handle your business and then beat Tennessee or Kentucky. If you're not going and just sweeping the road, which I still don't think they're going to.
Probably true.
So I think you got to win one of those other two games.
So it's kind of like a lot of Andy Kennedy years. We win one big game and it's in. Remember that? It beat Vanderbilt one time or beat Florida, and they lost them both. And it's kind of like that, those years. Sort of what the program has been historically for a long time. A win or two away.
Kentucky up to 7 in the net. Tennessee's at 5. Nobody's outside the top 100 and coming up except for Carolina and A&M. A&M's at 104. Carolina's at 117. As of right now. So there's your basketball news. We'll see. Again, I'll look for a Nick Witherspoon update in a second. I have not seen one of those offhand to this point. But while I'm doing that, I will tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market. A leader in condo financing in Oxford and the float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate, 662-234-2704, or JLOWE, at communitymtg.com.
Jeffrey Wright will join us in a little bit on the Patterson & Earhart Hotline. Patterson & Earhart, attorneys at law, specialize in personal injury law and real estate law, but theirs is a general practice that can handle any of your legal needs. When you contact Patterson & Earhart, you speak to one of the partners in the firm, and that's who will handle your case, not some paralegal at a faceless corporate firm. If Patterson and Earhart can't help you, they'll refer you to someone who can. John Calvin Patterson and Wes Earhart are Ole Miss guys. They're local guys, and when you call them, you're going to get one of them on the phone within the same day, guaranteed. So whether you've been injured in a car wreck or have other legal issues, give them a call. 662-526-1992, or check out their website, pelaws.com. Your initial consultation is free. On Tuesday, this past Tuesday, Pinnacle Trust hosted their annual economic forecast in Jackson at the Country Club of Jackson. Goldman Sachs economist John Towsley spoke. He highlighted a number of topics. The Pinnacle investment team also spoke. It was a terrific program. If you missed it, Don't fret. You'll be able to watch it here very soon, probably as early as Monday, on the Penn Trust website, PINNtrust.com. Mention you heard about Pinnacle Trust on this podcast, by the way. You'll get 10% off your first year's fees. This podcast also brought to you by the Weston Jackson. Gather at Estelle Wine Bar and Bistro tonight right there at the Weston Jackson, or go this afternoon for lunch. Sip on a creative craft cocktail. Enjoy their curated wine list. It's open for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch. Chef Caden's mission is to connect guests with the community through local partnerships. So gather at Estelle tonight. And we're brought to you by John Edwards, Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. If you've been starting to think about your summer trip, starting to think about heading up maybe over to Scotland or Ireland this summer for that golf trip you've always dreamed of, maybe you're going to the Caribbean on a cruise, resorts in Florida, whatever the case may be, get in touch with John. He's part of Virtuoso, and that partnership with Virtuoso allows him to provide you benefits that others, travelers just simply can't find on their own. 901-494-3387, or send him an email, jedwards@regencytravel.net. First-time clients save $50 off their first booked trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast.
Still time through February 6th. You can get rush shipping to get things from Scripted Jewelry, scriptedjewelry.com. Make Valentine's special for that special someone. Everything from putting a special message, fingerprints, and more on items for sale. Someone in Wallace, Texas just bought a money clip I see on the website. So you can take advantage of all their turnaround times and items that are handcrafted to order. And when you check out, you get a discount too. Put in Rebels10, R-E-B-E-L-S-1-0, in the coupon code box, and you get that 10% off. So see all the different options at scriptedjewelry.com. Now Jeffrey Wright here on the Patterson-Earhart Hotline. Jeffrey, good morning. Let's talk Super Bowl a little bit. It's on Sunday afternoon, 5:18, whatever the kickoff time is. I know you always have a good sheet available, always ready to go. What are we betting on Sunday afternoon?
Have we gotten any information of whether or not Gladys Knight is performing with or without a marching band?
Ooh, I have not heard that.
If she's performing with a band, I want the under. If she's not, I think Miss Gladys is going to do Miss Gladys.
Well, have they already set the over under, or could that tempt?
Yeah, it was 110.5, I think. 110.5 seconds. So
that's pretty average.
Yeah, it's been creeping down. It's been trending down. So that's a minute 50. I remember one year I got it around, I want to say maybe around 117. So it's just been trending downwards because it used to be just an automatic under. Because also, you got to also remember, in general, like no matter how talented of a performer they usually get, you're doing the national anthem at the Super Bowl. Like, I imagine there's some nerves, and when you're nervous, you have a tendency to go a little quicker.
I guess you set that by finding the last time that person sang it and then figuring out sort of what the average is of their previous encounters?
I would think, and I'm sure they talk to like actual composers and vocal performers saying, okay, well, if they like say they don't have evidence of Gladys Knight singing the national anthem, I'm sure what they do is they go and say, okay, well, what is someone with her vocal range? They find similar performances and see how long it takes those people to perform the anthem and then set the line. Then I'm sure it also moves based on betting.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think if she's by herself, she could ham it up a little bit. And you've always liked the national anthem bet. That's been one of your favorites for a while now.
Well, you got to start the game off right. And
when does the clock start? Does the clock start with O?
At her first note.
Yeah, the first utterance. Yeah.
And there's nothing quite as exhilarating as having to have a stopwatch, either on your phone or just a standard stopwatch ready to go right during the national anthem. And then that, if it's a close one, that utter confusion of did I win? Are we sending this to the judges? It's an exhilarating way to start your Super Bowl experience. Obviously, the coin toss is usually always a favorite. Here's the problem. The Patriots are the road team, and who's the captain? Is it Seymour? Whoever the captain is, he called.
Brady called it at overtime.
Yeah, right, but he is their captain that always calls the coin toss, and he always calls heads. So you can't do what will the call be. You can only do what will the flip be, heads or tails. That used to be one of my favorites, is trying to get some inside information and figuring out who would call the toss. That was always a fun one, but the odds are so stacked for heads on the coin toss, for heads being the call of the coin toss, because the guy that calls the toss for the Patriots always calls heads. You can't really double up on the toss.
But do you get a money line to make it just a flyer on tails?
I thought about that, but I mean, it is the
Super Bowl. You could swap some stuff up. Who knows?
I mean, I thought about that. My problem is, I think if this guy calls tails, there's gonna be some raised eyebrows. If you know what I mean.
Okay.
And I think the Super Bowl, I think the NFL needs this one to go off without a hitch. The most fun, exhilarating one, I think, is Tom Brady's over-under rushing total. It's always a half a yard. And really, all you need is just one quarterback sneak. That's it. Because sacks don't count against you.
Yeah, right.
And I believe this is where it gets exhilarating. I think in college, they count kneel downs as team rushes.
Right.
But I think in the NFL, they're counted as a player rush. And so,
if he's got 3 yards on the last series and they're ahead, yes, you might still be done.
I mean, that has always been one of those just exhilarating seat of your pants bets. Those are kind of the ones that I like early. I mean, the truth is, on some of my prop bets, most of those prop bets are just gut bets that I make at like 4 o'clock on Sunday.
What's the menu on Sunday?
Let's see. I was sent the menu. It's from your bachelor expert. Okay. Pizza puffs with marinara sauce.
Okay.
Ham and Swiss sliders. Those things are flames.
Talking about the things where you take the Hawaiian rolls and throw them in the oven.
Yeah.
And,
it turns out if you take a ton of ham, a ton of cheese and butter, and you put it in a Hawaiian roll, turns out that's pretty good.
It is, yeah.
Ponchos dip, spinach artichoke dip.
Whoa, what was the other one?
Ponchos cheese dip. That's a local thing.
Okay, gotcha.
Butter garlic pretzels, peanut butter brownie dip with graham crackers. I don't know what that is, but I'm very, 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 very intrigued by that one.
Say it again. Also, peanut butter dip with what?
Peanut butter brownie dip with graham crackers.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's the low carb option, sweetheart.
Yeah, that's gonna suck, I'm sure.
Yeah, so I'm pretty fired up about that. Of course, then I'm probably gonna do. There's a wing place kind of behind my house called All Star Wings that I'm a big fan of. I'll probably pick up from there for wings. What we're trying to decide, though, is do we need pizza too?
Well, you have pizza puffs already.
At this point, you've gone so far that I would just go yes.
I kind of thought so, too. Like, it'd just be comforting to know that it's there.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be the best option.
I mean, Monday night you're going to have leftovers, and that's okay because The Bachelor comes on.
I'm also not convinced that with the crew that I've got that I'm 100% going to have leftovers.
Oh, that's true.
How many people are you inviting?
It's not even a huge group. It's just a group of just beasts.
All right.
Well, my friends, like, you think amongst us I'm a slow eater? Like, compared to my high school friends, those guys look like they grew up in an orphanage full of only boys. And if you don't eat first, you're done.
No doubt that I stayed on theme, sort of. No doubt Peyton was wearing the Goodell shirt, right?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Fill me in. I missed this.
You didn't see this?
No, I didn't.
All right, so Peyton doing a press conference yesterday.
Sean Payton.
Yeah, correct. And he has a shirt on, and then over it he's got like a button down, but he's got one button not buttoned, so you can just see the very top outline of a shirt under it.
Okay.
And it is almost 100% was the Barstool Sports shirt that is Goodell is a clown shirt that they did from a Patriots thing, obviously, back in the day. But so,
okay, here is my deal.
Yep.
I understand owners are happy with Roger Goodell because he opens new markets. No shit. I could open new markets for the NFL.
I'm with
Why?
You.
Why? I don't understand. There has to be... There's something deeper here. I do not understand why the NFL wants this guy to be their commissioner, because the truth is, even now with baseball, with Rob Manfort, everyone else, like other than, I guess, Gary Bettman for the NHL, everyone
is
else
he
has
still
a respectable,
the NHL guy?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay, go ahead.
But but I mean, and that's the point. Like, NHL, who cares? It's the most niche of niche professional sports right now. And I say that as someone who actually enjoys hockey. But if you're the NFL, why do you want this guy to be your face?
It's a great question, because I could market the freaking NFL.
Yes.
I mean,
and guess what? I would do it for 1/60th of the price.
Laura doesn't watch sports. She could market the NFL.
Yes.
The NFL is the king. It is the undisputed king. You don't need... See, I thought Goodell... I read his statements yesterday about the Saints call and stuff. I thought they were weak. I think he's weak. Maybe,
I thought they were very legal.
And maybe that's why... Yeah, but I mean, no one's winning a lawsuit on a football game. I mean, because it's impossible, literally impossible, to legally establish that that call cost the Saints the game from a technical standpoint, because the Saints would still have had to kick a field goal. You know what I mean? And you can't yes. you can't legally assume that the kick would have been made and all that stuff. So he just comes across as out of touch. Just robotic, and maybe that's
See,
what
I
they
don't
want.
I don't think he comes across. He is out of touch. I believe it's been his only real employer. Like, he's just been one of those guys that's been in the NFL office. That's why I think it goes deeper.
Oh, he's clearly got the goods on multiple people.
But is it not as simple as, frankly, the owners don't really care about the part we're talking about? They're making tons of money, so sure. Why chance it?
Sure.
I mean, eh. Fine.
And he's the guy that gets out front and he takes the heat on the national
yes,
anthem.
Yes, I'm saying.
Thing.
He's the one that just, he absorbs everything.
He absorbs the beatings and they absorb the money. And they give him, what does he make, $40 million
a
year?
Yeah, it's 40-something million a year.
No, I think last year it was like 55 or 60.
Yeah, I mean, for $60 million, you can literally come beat me.
I think what the thing that surprises me the most is, they, you know, whatever they, his salary was 31.7. I don't know what he gets back end op. There's a lot. Apparently he makes nearly $50 million a year being the NFL commissioner. What blows me away is this idea that they act like he's doing, oh, such a good job because he's brought us into new markets. He's negotiated these television deals. I would argue that if you had a smarter, sharper guy, you'd have even more money.
Yeah, it's conceivable. I mean, I thought he mishandled the national anthem thing.
He in 17, he signed a 5-year extension that on just base will give him about $200 million over the life of it.
There you go.
$40 million a year. Base. It's a good deal.
I don't understand. I don't understand why the NFL wants him to be their face.
I think it's as easy as what Neil said. He's the lone villain. So that's it. There's no pressure. Nobody's talking about Stan or any of these other owners or even Jerry at this point. It's all just him. And he goes, hey, pay me. I'm going to make you money, and then I'm going to take every hit and be hated, and that's what it is. Took a break in our talk with Jeffrey to tell you about Master Cuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773. or get a free quote by emailing them at info@gomastercuts.com. Now is the time, while it's still chilly outside, to sign those annual contracts. Let Mastercuts take care of your lawn all year long. Everything from mowing and edging and weed eating to more important things or bigger things like your flower beds, your landscaping, even building structures, fences, decks, and more with Mastercuts. They've done all those things for me over the years. They can help you out too. Again, that is MastercutsLawn.com or 662-607-7773.
Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast or at rebelgrove.com. You'll get rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX legacy realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. HarryAlexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you are looking for, and then let him take care of the rest. It's ha@harryalexander.com. And we're brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with a personal touch. They also have a commercial checking account, now paying 1% interest as long as you keep $10,000 in your account, and it comes with fully interactive online banking. They'll set up any local business to deposit checks from their office, not have to worry with coming to the bank daily to deposit those checks. More than likely, any business owner at another bank is now paying a monthly fee for their account, and they are most assuredly not making 1% on their money. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
Now back to Jeffrey Wright.
Right, but why not find someone who's sharper that's willing to do that?
Well, because those guys might start blaming you. They might start blaming the coaches, blaming the players, blaming the referees, blaming anybody other than himself, which creates more problems for the owner.
Yeah, it's certainly conceivable that...
So they're just taking the devil they know.
Yeah,
yeah,
of course.
It's certainly conceivable that a smarter guy would say, well, here's the reason. Here's the actual reason that...
But that is kind of what he did yesterday with Peyton. Yesterday, he basically, with Sean Payton, said, well, we didn't want this to get public. We called an admitted fault, but we didn't want it to go public. I mean, he threw Peyton under the bus.
Yeah, but I don't. Peyton couldn't be a shill for the NFL. It's okay. I'm gonna be careful with how I do this. Peyton did in New Orleans what he had to do that day. He had to punch back. If he doesn't,
wait, you mean you can do something your fan base would like to see?
Yeah, it's. I'm trying not to create a Ole Miss firestorm here. I understand why, for example, Ole Miss has sort of towed the company line as it pertains to the SEC and the NCAA investigation. I get it. I understand it completely. But there's absolutely no doubt that if you came out and gave the fans what they wanted and punched and kicked and screamed and hollered and pointed fingers and all that stuff, that while you would not make friends in Birmingham and Indianapolis, you would make a lot of friends in Memphis and Jackson and wherever else your alumni base is. You'd be wildly popular with those people. So it's a choice you have to make. Peyton's decision was very clear. My bread gets buttered in New Orleans.
Yeah, and real quick, for anybody that's been under the rock, we understand the frustration of the fans. We talked to Coach Peyton, the team, the players. We understand the frustration they feel right now. We certainly want to address them. Whenever officiating is part of any kind of discussion post-game, it's never a good outcome for us, but we also know that our officials are human. We also know they're officiating a game in which they often have to make snap decisions under difficult circumstances, and they're not going to get it right every time. As I say, they're human. We have worked very hard to bring technology in to try to make sure we can do whatever's possible to address those issues. But technology is not going to solve all those issues. The game is not officiated by robots. And then he goes into what Jeffrey talked about. We addressed this immediately after the game. If you go back specifically on Sunday, Coach Peyton spoke to Al Riveron our head of officials, immediately after the game, Al told him that's a play we want to have called. I've spoken to him. Troy Vinson has spoken to him. I've spoken to Miss Benson. Coach has also spoken to the competition committee, so there's been a great deal of communication.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I'm looking at the ESPN. Even after third down, so they started third down with an 81% chance to win. After the field goal went through, they had a 78% chance to win. Yeah. That's in the fourth quarter. That's even before the Rams got the ball back.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it's very obvious that he is not a sharp guy. It's very obvious he is not a smart guy. He just happens to be the right guy, right place, right time. So good for him.
Did you watch Ole Miss Florida last night?
I did. And I'm sure there's, I haven't looked on the board, but I'm sure there's certainly some criticism. Man, I don't know. How much time was left on the clock when Florida crossed half court?
About 6 seconds, maybe a little more. That's, if I have a criticism.
Man, really is iffy.
Now, look, I'm a pro foul guy. I foul.
Yeah.
But if I'm not going to foul, I'm not letting them get to the mid-court stripe free.
Yes, I would have pressed, and then once they got past half court, I would have fouled.
Because if they want to drive past me and take a layup, have at it. I'll give you a layup. You're shooting threes. I'm going to press you. I want to make you work to get the ball past midcourt. And then I'm fouling, frankly. But I want to work. I want to make you work. I don't want you to get ahead of steam and let the guy that you want to get the shot get probably close to the spot where he wants to take the shot. It was defended well. He made a great shot. At some point, you have to give the kid credit. This is a tough spot for coaches, and Kermit talked about it after the game. 8.8 is a lot of time. But, man, I just don't like – there's one outcome that can be harmful for you right there, and that's them tying the game. I don't want them to take a three, and therefore I'm going to find a way to foul you.
Also, Ole Miss is in heavy foul trouble. If you foul, you lessen the chances of overtime win or loss, which I thought was fairly important. Ole Miss was not winning that game in overtime.
I believe Ole Miss had one timeout. So even if
they took the final timeout with that, and I think that was a factor because the last words that I saw him say to his team with eight, he said, "Hey, we have no timeouts left." So they didn't have a timeout. So I'm sure something he was thinking. He'll never say this, and he can't.
What if we can't get the ball in?
I'm sure he was thinking, I don't have the smartest team in the world. I don't have the highest basketball IQ team in the world. What if we foul and they make both free throws, or even they make just the second free throw, and we've got to inbound the ball, and somebody does a boneheaded thing and panics on the inbound and throws it away or doesn't throw it in. I'm sure that was going through his mind. And he can't say that publicly because that's throwing your kids completely under the bus, then running over them and then backing up over them again. But that had to be part of it. I just think
– as long as you tweet out a Bible verse afterwards, you can do that, though.
Well, that's true.
Ole Miss people.
I just don't think that's something – to me – I'm fouling, even if I'm fouling with 6 seconds, and that's a lot of time to foul with because he's going to go to the line. He's probably going to make both shots. You're going to be up one, inbounding the ball with 6 seconds left. And even if you go down and make it with 5 seconds left, make two, you got to do it again. I get it. I understand exactly what he's saying. I want to try, if I'm a coach in that scenario, I want to try to force that team, the other team, to make a hurried, hectic shot. And then if that falls, you go, hey, that's life. But, yes, it was defended well, but he got a good look. I don't want them getting that kind of
look. He got separation.
He got separation, and he got to a spot on the floor where he was very comfortable. And people say, well, it was a fadeaway. No, it wasn't. It was a step back. It was a shot that he very clearly has worked on. It probably was the exact play that Mike drew up in the huddle.
Yeah, I think Chase's biggest point, because I just felt like throughout the course of the game, I felt like every time Ole Miss got the lead, I don't want to say they were lucky because they were clearly playing hard. They were playing good defense, but I never felt like Ole Miss controlled the game. I did feel like they made some runs and took the lead, but I never felt like they ever like took control of the game. And I completely agree with Chase. I just kept sitting there thinking, man, if this game goes to overtime, they're not winning.
Yeah, I mean, Florida got in overtime. Ole Miss panicked in overtime, and there were fouls everywhere at that point.
And I just felt like once you got to that point, like you had to try to do everything, I think, in your power at that point to make sure that game didn't go to overtime.
Curious your thought here. You know about as much of this as I do. I wrote a story of baseball this morning. Ole Miss moving more infielders to outfielders, something Mike's done throughout his tenure for a lot of reasons that by the point of this interview I probably will have talked about a little bit. What's your take on doing that constantly like they do as far as taking shortstops and athletes? It's almost kind of the modern-day version of when old-timey football teams would just sign a bunch of quarterbacks and figure out where to put them.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of it in general, just because I don't think just because you're a great infielder that necessarily you'll make for a great outfielder. I understand the logic behind it. The logic behind it is, well, person's one of my 9 best players, but I don't think it's a coincidence that I think one of the common themes that we've seen in year 19?
Whatever 19. Year it is the number of years Mike's been here.
So now that we'll be in year 19, one of the consistent hallmarks of Ole Miss baseball is poor outfield play, typically. And I think those things go hand in hand. I think baseball is such a skilled game that repetitions matter. And when you've had a kid that's been playing outfield since he was 12 versus a kid that you're like, well, you're a good shortstop, but we got another good shortstop, so just go get there and go get out there and center and see how it goes. I've never been a huge fan of it.
I think it's the way he skirts the scholarship situation, because true outfielders that are at least somewhat college elite are freaking expensive and go in the draft at such high clips. I think it's his way to sort of bypass the scholarship thing as much as he can.
Yeah, I mean, my point is that
J.B. Woodman's aren't on trees.
Right. He can sometimes get away with it if he has like a kid like Bousfield, where, all right, Bousfield, you got center, and remember, you don't have help in left or right.
Yeah.
So go get him. And there's no such thing as a left or right fielder ever calling you off.
Well, I mean, look, their World Series team was by far the best outfield team Mike's ever had.
Yeah, because, you had Lee was
– Brad Braxton and Jamison and some of those guys out there.
I mean, like, you had actual outfielders there. So I don't think that's a coincidence, but I get it. And it's a way to get your best players on the field. But in general, like, I'm not saying that I deal in absolutes. Like, I would never do it. I understand the logic behind it. I'm just not in favor of it. But as you mentioned, elite outfielders are usually gone by the draft.
So a swing back to the beginning. Who's winning on Sunday? What are we looking for from a football standpoint?
This line is wrong, right?
I like the Rams a lot.
I think the Rams win.
I do too. If
you look at what gives Brady trouble, everyone says, well, a pass rush. It's like, duh. Like, every quarter. Like, this has been my point forever watching the NFL. All pass rushes make them look human. But it's usually not edge rushers that have a ton of success with him for this reason. Brady's so good at moving within the pocket. You know, if you've got a guy coming from the edge, he usually can dance around enough to where he can still get throws off, and those aren't the guys that bother him. When you got guys like Aaron Donald and Dominican Sue that are bull rushing from his face, those have been the ones that are typically been able to get into his face and give him problems. And I don't think the Rams are going to have to blitz to get to him. And I don't know, man. Like, I just haven't thought this Patriots team's been that good all year.
No, they've just kind of skated here as much as the Super Bowl team is. And what you're talking about is the exact same thing that gave Breeze trouble throughout his career in year two. It's in his face. Because they do. Yeah. They move so well side to side. They probably don't get credit for that. But, I mean, especially, like I said, the way Sue is playing right now, too, when you've got to deal with that on top of Aaron Donald, who is the best defensive player in the world, I mean, it's a problem. And I do think the Rams are going to score. I just do. I think they've even got such life out of the other running back. I mean, everything else. This thing, it's going to be somewhat close for most of it. I'm not saying they're blowing them out. But I think the Rams get into the 30s in this game.
Yeah, I've just felt like even despite that 4 or 5-game stretch at the end of the year where they didn't look good, which you can usually directly trace back to Todd Gurley's health,
mm-hmm.
I've just felt like for much of the year, it's been the Rams and the Saints are the two best teams, and I think the Rams beat the Saints. I think the Saints were the best team for 17 weeks in the playoffs, and then I felt like the Rams were the next best team, and then I felt like the Rams went to New Orleans and won. So I just didn't really think the AFC was all that good this year.
One last thing before you go. You watch all the college basketball. We know how good Tennessee is. This Kentucky team, though, suddenly you look up, they're 17-3, 6-1 in the league, or whatever it is. How good are they? Are we talking Final Four good for this Wildcat group?
I think so, because, I mean, when we went into the season, that was the expectations. Then they kind of got cocky, and then they ran into a buzzsaw with Duke. And though I don't think Cal would ever admit it, I think Cal went back to the locker room, went back to his wonderful, lovely home in Lexington, which I'm sure is modest as possible. I think he was smiling ear to ear because he knew there's one thing Cal loves. Cal loves to be able to yell and to have them have to listen to him.
You think he's got about, what, 2,100 square feet in Lexington somewhere? Something like that?
Yeah, don't you think? And I
yeah,
maybe,
just a modest three-bedroom, two-bath.
Maybe he's got a nice, you know, maybe he's got a nice little garage that's kind of separate from the home. And I'm sure it's extremely tasteful. And I'm sure everything just goes, man, that's just a pleasant, warm home.
Did you put stipulations on this bachelor appearance that's upcoming?
Is this happening?
Oh, it's going to happen.
Neil says it's happening.
Okay, well, enjoy.
All right. Have a good day, bud. Thanks to Jeffrey, as always, for his time. The podcast brought to you also by Visit Oxford. Visit OxfordMS.com/events to see everything going on in town this week, including tonight, Thacker Mountain Radio with Chris Kander and The Weight of a Piano. That's at 6 o'clock at Off Square Books. Also tonight, Ensemble 4.1s at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts at 7:30 on February 1st. There's another Off-Square Books event at 5 o'clock, and then the third annual Ole Miss Baseball Ladies Forum February 2nd at 8 o'clock at Swayze Field. You can find out more information there as well at the link on the Visit Oxford website. You got basketball, as Neil has or will tell you about. Empty Bowls lunch February 7th at the Conference Center. It's a little slower time, but still some activities for you to take advantage of. So just go to the website and see all the things going on in Oxford. Also, you can use it as a resource for the businesses in town to get contact information, hours, and more. That's visitoxfordms.com.
Yeah, Ole Miss basketball on Saturday. Mississippi State comes to town at 2:30. Tickets, standing room only tickets available via OleMissTix.com. Ole Miss baseball season right around the corner, the number 13 ranked Rebels. You can buy season tickets for as low as $150. Go to OleMissTix.com. Women's basketball tonight, 7 o'clock at the Pavilion against the Auburn Tigers. Go to OleMissSports.com for more about that. We've been telling you for a while about Home 2 Suites Oxford. They are now taking football 2019 reservations. Be a great place to make as your home base for the Ole Miss football season. You can call 662-238-3400. They also have some availability for a double-decker weekend at the end of April, which is always a really busy weekend in Oxford. So if you're thinking about double-decker weekend, you ought to get in touch with the people at Home 2 Suites Oxford, 662-238-3400. The podcast is also brought to you by Dead Soxie. Been telling you for a while, Dead Soxie would be informing you of new products and opportunities. They're pleased to announce a way for you, the Rebel Grove community, to be part of the process. in the creation of new sock concepts. There's still limited quantities of the Mississippi sock line available. And in an effort to launch a new line, they are increasing the discount to 30% off all items. As this original Mississippi line comes to a conclusion, don't miss your opportunity to feel the difference a quality sock makes. Additionally, there will be new concept pictures forthcoming where they really want your honest feedback and input as to what resonates with you. So for all of you who have tried them out, but the pair, a couple pairs, now's a great time to round out your week's worth with the 30% off. And if you haven't tried them, you really owe it to yourself to give it a shot. And at 30% off, it is a super bargain. DeadSoxy.com, promo code RebelGrove at checkout for 30% off.
We told you how easy it is to switch your medications over to GNM Pharmacy. You just call them at 662-236-2222, and they will take care of the rest. I'll tell you, I went to the doctor yesterday, picked up two prescriptions. Didn't really time myself, but I walked into GNM. 23 minutes later, had the prescriptions in my hand and walking out. It was quick. It was easy. And they learned to know you as well. So GNM Pharmacy there in Oxford. Again, 662-236-2222 right there on South Lamar Boulevard. Appreciate Jeffrey checking in. As I said, he always does the hosting thing for the Super Bowl. It's kind of his deal there. I've decided to attend the party. I'm mostly over things. I'm fine. I know a lot of Saints fans that are boycotting. He just can't emotionally watch this game on Sunday. I'm gonna pull for the Rams and be fine. I'm almost a little upset for my fandom a little bit that I'm not more bothered still at this point a couple weeks later, but I'm apparently not where a lot of my compatriots are at this point.
Let's see. What are my plans for Sunday? I've got to write 10 weekend thoughts. It's just me and Carson. I won't be surprised if he gets back from soccer practice and bails on me, goes out into the hood somewhere. So there's a decent chance it's just me. Which actually will be perfectly fine. I'll turn the game on. I'm far more excited about Thunder at Celtics on Sunday at 1 o'clock than I am the Super Bowl, but I will turn it on.
They play 82 games. There's not a one that's any more important than the other one.
No, but they're really playing well right now. It's kind of fun to watch them. So I'll turn it on. I'll watch it. I won't be locked into it.
I want the Rams to win for my brother and because I'm so sick of the Patriots. It's a combination of multiple things at once where I'll be a pretty hardcore Rams fan on Sunday just because I'm sick of New England as much as anything else.
Yeah, I'm tired of New England too. I kind of still feel cheated. I would have liked Chiefs in this game. It would have been a lot more fun. I would have liked Saints in this game. Would have been a lot more fun. Saints and Chiefs would have been great fun. But it is what it is. Like I said, I'll turn it on. If it gets good, I'll lock into it. If it doesn't, I'll easily check out of it. There won't be much of an investment.
You care about the commercials? You watch them ahead of time?
If there's a way to watch them ahead of time, I'll probably watch them ahead of time.
A lot of times they get thrown on YouTube at some point.
I'll probably watch them ahead of time because I might make a 10 weekend thoughts out of them. I mean, I'm not trying to be like anti-whatever. I'll probably light the grill, and I'll probably smoke some wings without smoking them. Carson doesn't like the smoke, like wood smoke flavor.
Really?
Yeah, it's not his thing.
Really?
So I'll probably.
It's my favorite part.
I'll probably smoke them without the wood, which is fine. We might order a pizza. It'll be pretty laid back. Although, a pizza order on Super Bowl Sunday probably difficult.
Yeah, I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, Jeffrey and I used to do this every year when he would host me go over there. That's one of the things to the Oxford Exxon with the ribs is it's much easier than pizza where you just grab them and go on with your day. It's get the pork, get the ribs, and move on.
Yeah, and I might go do something like that. I might go pick up ribs.
Call Funky's out of time. They'll get a pizza for you.
That's possible.
Have it ready. I mentioned this with Jeffrey a minute ago on the show story this morning where Ole Miss trying to find its best nine, not necessarily its nine best. It's a little bit of a cliche, but it's something Mike Bianco dealing with right now from a, hey, where do I play offense? Where do I play defense? Because they've got a ton of bats, and there's not, frankly, perfect places to play any of them. Right now, Tim Elko, who came in as a corner infielder, is in the outfield conversation. Chase Cockrell, who DH'd last season for most of the year, he is in the outfield conversation. Jacob Adams and Anthony Servideo, they're battling at second base. The loser of that, or at least the best puzzle piece to that, potentially is an outfield option as well. And none of these guys are really outfielders. Carl Gindel, the only guy in the outfield competition that is a primary outfielder, unless someone is slipping my mind. And I'm as intrigued from a preseason standpoint as I've been in a long time, just to see how Mike kind of puts these pieces together. And I think it's a lot of the reason why he gives Thomas Dillard so much chances to catch, because if you could catch Thomas, which we'll see, he's going to get some opportunities. He's better. Cooper is the better option because of the upside, but Cooper's got to do it. I mean, Cooper's still letting some pass balls get away. He cannot be bad defensively in play whatsoever. They have a problem if that's the case. That would become a huge problem for Ole Miss. If Dillard could do it, suddenly you've got a premier bat behind the plate and you could do a little more defense stuff in the outfield and move it around a little bit. So I think Mike's going to give that opportunity. Knox Leposer, a freshman, has shown well behind the plate, but he's a true freshman that's had a broken foot for a while, so you can't have expectations on him as well. I don't know what Mike's going to do. He's going to platoon. He's going to play a little bit everybody. He's going to try out all sorts of stuff in the first few weeks of the season, even if it costs him a couple games. So I'm intrigued, and I don't really know what to make of it, because you look at the overall roster, and it's a good problem to have. But at the end of the day, you do kind of have to match defense and offense and figure that out, because their best offensive outfield lineup is probably the worst outfield lineup from a defensive standpoint in the league. So I don't really know where that middle ground comes for Ole Miss right now.
Can you negotiate a way to not play defense and just hit?
Just have home run derbies every night. That's what you should do.
It's possible.
Or play like wiffle ball, where you play infield defense, but if it goes to the outfield, you just get a certain base or an out, depending on where it goes.
A predetermined base.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, how realistic is it that Dillard could catch at a average level? We know he can hit at a well above average level. He could probably hit at an elite level. How realistic is it that a guy who hasn't caught in a while can get back there and handle the catching duties and be good?
He caught in the fall. He caught last summer some with his Cape League team. He's better. Scouts do not believe he can catch at the next level. So that's kind of where it is. Now, that's not college, but that's an indicator of ceiling a little bit. He's been a little better than I thought he would be at this point. He's still kind of stiff just because he hadn't done it, and it's not the most comfortable spot for him in the world. But he's had experience there. It's just a lot of it is that Mike demands so much from that spot. You've got three catchers on that staff with Clement and Lafferty and Bianco, and that's a high-profile spot for the Ole Miss program, and he's not going to sacrifice defense at the catcher position for the most part. So,
but you might lose.
That's the problem with Cooper, though, too. He's got to play better. I mean, you waited on Cooper to take that step, and he still can do it. He might be fine when the lights come on, but you cannot have – it's not lazy, but a lack of focus pass balls from a catcher who is a defensive catcher, and that's the reason he's in the game. And that's where Ole Miss is a little bit there. So, you know, like I said, the worst case is not that bad for this team because they're good. They're going to win a lot of baseball games. But if you said, hey, give me two problems that we need to watch, well, it's catching and how catching affects defensively in the outfield. Because I think you just play Kessinger and Servideo in the middle infield because that gives you the best middle infield in the league. Just be strong there and play it that way. And then the other one, as I've talked about, is does it matter and do you have a true Friday night elite arm? Do you just have a lot of really good, or do you have somebody that kind of takes that next step? So,
well, and if you don't have somebody who's really, really good, you've got to play a good defensive lineup. Who's the center fielder?
Well, that's the thing. It's Ryan Olenek right now, and he's a downgrade from a lot of different options, but he's got to play somewhere. He's going to hit. So I don't know. I mean, Carl Gindel was their only outfielder who you went, hey, he could be a plus center fielder, but I don't know if he's going to hit enough. And I don't know with him and Cooper in the lineup together what you do there. I really hadn't heard Carl's name a lot in the last couple weeks. Servideo would be their best defensive outfielder, but you're taking an elite second baseman off second base to do that. And you're taking a guy who's going to be the shortstop
next
year.
Olenek would play second?
No, Jacob Adams would play second. You can move Olenek to the corner. Or Olenek could come in and play second, too. Yeah, you got options there.
I'd rather have an elite defensive center fielder. than an elite defensive second baseman.
I just hate taking a guy who's an infielder that's going to be your shortstop, that is whatever, and go, hey, for a year, go play out in the outfield.
Yeah.
Like, I just – there's something
when
to that.
When he could be second base, and you'd be really good up the middle.
Oh, he'd be really good.
Well, that's where if Johnson elite. Would live up to his potential, you'd be really good up the middle. Now you've got to finish that out. I'm not a big believer in just throwing a bat in center field.
I mean, Olenek played it 2 years ago. They've had that. I mean, he's been there, but it's not a Bousfield Woodman kind of deal at all.
I like having a center fielder that can make plays.
Because if Olenek's in a corner and Dillard's in the other corner, suddenly the corners are pretty good, but somebody's got to be in the middle. So.
Yeah.
You know, they're putting Cockrell out there some. He runs better than people think, but he's not a defensive option by any means. Elko is better than he gets credit for being, but he's never really been out there much.
Of course, in fairness, there aren't any – well, there might be one or two, but there aren't many college teams that don't have these types of problems.
Yeah, I mean, the problems they have are pretty high-class problems. But it's a lineup and a roster construction that is interesting, if nothing else. I mean, I'm telling you, that's why. That's why Dillard's going to catch some, just to see what that looks like, because sort of need that to be okay at times. I mean, like I told you the other day, Cooper can't catch 65 games in a row. I mean, he's going to have some breaks in there. There's going to have to be some breathers. So they got to figure that out as well. Looking around a little bit, I saw Lincoln Riley got a big deal for him to stay in Norman for a while or as long. Contract length does not matter whatsoever, but I still found it interesting. They opened up the Brinks truck for him and tried to do as much as they could.
Try to hold him off from the NFL as long as possible, which might only be one more year.
You just make it as hard of a decision as you can and move on with your day.
Yeah, sure. You do your part, and at some point you're going to lose him to the NFL.
Because you're going to lose him to the NFL at some point.
Yeah, sure. But you want to make it as difficult as possible, make him at least be selective. But, yeah, he's going to go coach the NFL at some point. I'm sure smart people in Norman already have a decent idea of who his successor is.
Think so?
Yeah.
Got a plan for that now?
Sure.
That's how college football's changed. You have to plan for that for a guy who's like 35 years old or something.
Sean McVay is what, like 19?
He might have had the best answer to the whole officiating thing of anybody that's been asked over the course
what
of the
week.
What did he say? Just talked about it being very, very unfortunate that, you know, he's not going to feel bad for his team, but he at least did recognize the situation.
Sure.
There's so many of them that want to just put the curtains up in front of their face and nah. But he was very thought-provoking.
Well, his running back did an Instagram of a jersey swap with the referee. I mean, I'll give the Rams credit. I mean, they shouldn't be like, hey, we don't deserve to be here. No,
you're not apologizing.
No, you're there. But, I mean, can you at least acknowledge? Yeah, sure, of course. That's why I think the NFL would really love the Patriots to win the Super Bowl.
You know, McVay is so interesting because Dylan and I have talked about this. I think as he gets older, he's going to become that really opinionated Sean Payton pick at you. It's just he knows, hey, I'm – barely 30 years old here. We gotta pay our dues a little. I'm gonna say the right things because I think he's got that sort of edge down the road. But he's still filling himself out as an NFL head coach here in year two or three or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's amazing how close the Rams came to not hiring him. How close the Rams came to losing him to San Francisco. The Rams loved him the very first meeting, but they couldn't convince themselves to hire this 30-year-old kid. What are we doing? Why are we doing this? And then, have you read the story?
No.
They're on an airplane because they went to Florida to interview some cat. And they're back on the plane flying back to L.A. 5 hours, no cell phone signal. Losing their minds because he's interviewing with the 49ers. So at one point, he gets on his cell phone, one of the guys with the Rams, and reaches out to somebody in the 49ers building. Is he still in the room? Yeah, he's still in the room. Losing his mind. And when he lands, first thing he does is he sends him a text that goes, get out of there. Apparently that's when McVay knew he was getting the Rams job. Get out of there.
Yeah.
Get out of that room.
Ended.
Yeah. And they flew him to L.A. the next day and introduced him the day after that.
Here we are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's change the game, and the NFL is a cookie-cutter league, and Lincoln Riley is viewed as someone from that cloth, and so, yes, he will be hired. Cliff Kingsbury is now the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. And the reason he's the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals is that he's very similar to Sean McVay in terms of dynamics and such, in their opinion.
And frankly, a guy who did not maximize Patrick Mahomes.
No.
It's interesting.
Of course, maximizing him in Lubbock.
Yeah, I get it.
And maximizing him with a roster full of NFL players might be a different thing.
Yeah, it's fair.
It also shows you, in case anyone wanted to know, it shows you what the NFL thinks of the Texas Tech job.
Yeah.
They don't give a damn.
Yeah. A lot of content up at rebelgrove.com. We'll get to more as it goes on. There's some recruiting up. Russell doing some stuff today, but we'll get anything that happens to you when we can as well. More baseball, basketball, and taping not too long ago from football as well.
Taping a greatest pot in the South. It's just me and Jay this afternoon. Okay. Taping that. Taping a beer garden with Larry Holder tonight. We'll talk Saints. We'll talk Super Bowl. We'll talk Anthony Davis and the Pelicans. Mm-hmm. And potentially taping a soft verbal depending on things that are happening with Russell's family.
So we'll talk to you tomorrow.